feel like sometimes you might be in your own way when it comes to your dating life, and maybe you've just become so jaded and just hurt from the fucked up world that is dating? Well, if you do, I highly recommend Brené Brown's The Power of Vulnerability, which is a lecture series that you can get on Audible. To me, her research and vulnerability is so powerful, and it honestly helped me bring down a lot of my walls and barriers. So I suggest you check it out. It's a 6-part lecture series that you can get on Audible. If you use my promo code, you can try Audible for a month free. That's audibletrial.com/51stghosts. And make sure to check out the wide variety of the hundreds of unmatched titles that Audible has to offer. Hi, and welcome to 51st Ghosts. Today, I'm going to be doing something a little different. Normally, I either have an interview or I talk about different aspects of dating. But today, I wanted to do a dramatic reading of an article that I reference a lot in my previous podcast, the one before Lindsay's interview, because I feel like it would be delightful for me. So, I'm just going to jump right into it. Actually, before I jump right into it, this is kind of a reminder of what the article's about. This is by Lori Gottlieb, Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Good Enough. And she actually has a book. This article was originally in 2008, written in. Daylight savings time is really messing with me, so I apologize. And it's in The Atlantic. You can still find it online. It's where I'm reading it from. And she wrote a book. So this is a, well, I don't know how dramatic I'm going to be. I'm probably just going to read it and then throw shade on it. Reading of Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Good Enough by Lori Gottlieb. Illustrated by Lou Brooks. About 6 months after my son was born, he and I were sitting on a blanket at the park with a close friend and her daughter. It was a sunny summer weekend, and other parents and their kids picnicked nearby. Mothers munching on berries and lounging on the grass. Fathers tossing balls with their giddy toddlers. My friend and I, who, in fits of self-empowerment, had conceived our babies as sperm donors because we hadn't met Mr. Right yet, surveyed the idyllic scene. "Ah, this is the dream," I said, and we nodded in silence for a moment, then burst out laughing. In some ways, I meant it. We both dreamed of motherhood. Here we were, picnicking in the park with our children. But it was also decidedly not the dream. The dream, like that of our mothers and their mothers from time immemorial, was to fall in love, get married, and live happily ever after. Of course, we'd both loathe to admit it in this day and age, but ask any soul-bearing 40-year-old single heterosexual woman what she most longs for in life. And she probably won't tell you it's a better career or a smaller waistline or a bigger apartment. Most likely, she'll say what she really wants is a husband, parentheses, and by extension, a child. I will give Lori props for at least saying it's heterosexual women and leaving us lesbians out of that mess. To the outside world, of course, we still call ourselves feminists and insist, vehemently even, that we're independent and self-sufficient and don't believe in any of that damsel in distress stuff. But in reality, we aren't fish who can't do without a bicycle. We're women who want a traditional family. And despite growing up in an era when the centuries-old mantra to get married young was finally, parentheses, and it seemed refreshingly, replaced by encouragement to postpone that milestone in pursuit of high ideals, parentheses, education, career, but also true love. Every woman I know, no matter how successful and ambitious, how financially and emotionally secure, feels panic occasionally coupled with desperation if she hits 30 and finds herself unmarried. Oh, I know. I'm guessing there are single 30-year-old women reading this right now who will be writing letters to the editor to say that the women I know aren't wildly representative, that I have been co-opted by the cult of the feminist backlash, and basically, that I have no idea what I'm talking about. Lord have mercy. And all I can say is, if you're not worried, either you're in denial or you're lying. In fact, take a good look in the mirror and try to convince yourself that you're not worried, because you'll see how silly your face looks when you're being disingenuous. My dear God. Okay. Whether you acknowledge it or not, there's good reason to worry. By the time your 35th birthday brunch celebration rolls around for still single women, serious, irreversible life issues masquerading as quote-unquote jokes creep into public conversations. Well, I don't feel old, but my ex sure do. Or, maybe this year I'll marry Todd. I'm not getting any younger. The birthday girl smiles a bit too widely as she delivers these lines, and everyone laughs a little too hard for a little too long. Not because we find these sentiments funny, because we're awkwardly acknowledging how unfunny they are. At their core, they pose one of the most complicated, painful, and pervasive dilemmas many single women are forced to grapple with nowadays. Is it better to be alone or to settle? My advice is this: settle! That's right, don't worry about passion or intense connection. Don't nix a guy based on his annoying habit of yelling bravo in movie theaters. Overlook his halitosis, an abysmal sense of aesthetic. Halitosis is a pretentious way to say bad breath, just so you guys know. Abysmal sense of aesthetics, dear God. I'm just like, anyway. Because if you want to have the infrastructure in place to have a family, settling is the way to go. Based on my observations, in fact, settling will probably make you happier in the long run, since many of those who marry with great expectations become more disillusioned with each passing year. Parentheses. It's hard to maintain that level of zing when the conversation morphs into discussions about who's changing diapers or balancing the checkbook. So, when you start to build a life together, the relationship goes to shit because you have to talk about real life things? Okay, let's get back to Lori. I mean, obviously I'm not a professional, and she is. Obviously, I wasn't always an advocate for settling. In fact, it took not settling to make me realize that settling is the better option. Even though settling is a rampant phenomenon, talking about it in a positive light makes people profoundly uncomfortable. Whenever I make the case for settling, people look at me with creased eyebrows of disapproval or frowns of disappointment, the way a child might look at an older sibling who just informed her that Jerry's kids aren't going to walk, even if you send them money. I don't know what this means at all. Okay. Anyway. It's not only politically incorrect to get behind settling, it's downright un-American. Yes, I'm sure it's the same as, you know, gay slurs and wanting to build a wall. I guess this was 2008, so I guess there was, like, less, maybe, issues at the time. I won't judge her. I mean, I'm completely judging every single word I'm reading, so, anyway. Our culture tells us to keep our eyes on the prize, quote, while our mothers, who know better, tell us not to be so picky. and the theme of holding out for true love, whatever that is, look at the divorce rate, permeates our collective mentality. Oh my God. Okay. Even situation comedies, starting in the 1970s with the Mary Tyler Moore Show and going all the way to Friends, features endearing single women in the dating trenches, and there's supposed to be something romantic and even heroic about their search for true love. Of course, the crucial difference is that whereas the earlier series begins after Mary has just been jilted by her fiancé, the more modern-day Friends opens as Rachel Green leaves her nice guy, orthodontist fiancé at the altar simply because she isn't feeling it. But either way, in episode after episode, as both women to continue to be unlucky in love, settling starts to look like pretty darn appealing. Mary is supposed to be contentedly independent and fulfilled by her newsroom family, but in fact, her life seems lonely. Are we supposed to assume that at the end of the series, Mary, by then in her late 30s, found her soulmate after the lights in the newsroom went out and her work family was disbanded? If her experience was anything like mine or that of my singles friends, it's unlikely. And while Rachel and her supposed soulmate Ross finally get together for the umpteenth time in the finale of Friends, do we feel confident that she'll be happier with Ross than she would have been had she settled down with Barry, the orthodontist from 10 years earlier? She and Ross have passion, but have never had long-term stability, and the fireworks she experiences with him, but not with Barry, might actually turn out to be a liability, given how many times the relationship has already gone up in flames. I see what you did there, Lori. It's equally questionable whether Sex and the City's Carrie Bradshaw, who cheated on her kind-hearted and generous boyfriend Aiden, only to end up with more exciting but self-absorbed Mr. Big, will be better off in the framework of marriage and family. Parentheses. Sometime after the breakup, when Carrie ran into Aiden on the street, he was carrying his infant son, baby Bjorn. I've never watched Sex and the City. Can anyone imagine Mr. Big walking with a Bjorn? Bjorn? I don't know what I'm talking about. When we're holding out for deep romantic love, we have the fantasy that this level of passionate intensity will make us happier. But marrying Mr. Goodenough might be an equally viable option, especially if you're looking for a stable, reliable life companion. Madame Bovary might not see it that way, but if she remained single, I'll bet she would have been even more depressed than she was while living with her tedious but caring husband. Not to spoil this, but Madame Bovary kills herself at the end of the book. So I'm not sure if being single or like would have made her more depressed. Jesus Christ. What I didn't realize when I decided in my 30s to break up with my boyfriends I might otherwise have ended up marrying is that while settling seems like an enormous act of resignation when you're looking at it from the vantage point of a single person, once you take the plunge and do it, you'll probably be relatively content. Because that's life goals, is to be relatively content. It sounds obvious now, but I didn't fully appreciate back then that what makes for a good marriage isn't necessarily what makes for a good romantic relationship. Once you're married, it's not about whom you want to go on vacation with. It's about whom you want to run a household with. Marriage isn't a passion fest. It's more like a partnership formed to run a very small, mundane, often boring nonprofit business. And I mean this in a good way. It's gonna be my new like Bumble bio. Looking for someone to help me run a very small, mundane, and boring nonprofit business in the best way possible. I don't mean to say that settling is ideal. I'm simply saying that it might have gotten an undeservedly bad rap. I mean, when you put it like a mundane and often boring like nonprofit business, I say, what's the question? As the only single woman, oh my God, this is my favorite paragraph. As the only single woman in my son's Mommy and Me group, I used to listen each week to a litany of unrelenting complaints about people's husbands and feel pretty good about my decision to hold out for the right guy, only to realize that these women wouldn't trade places with me for a second, no matter how dull their marriages might be or how desperately they might long for a different husband. Oh man. They, like me, would rather feel alone in a marriage than actually be alone. Because they, like me, realize that marriage ultimately isn't about cosmic connection. It's about having a teammate, even if he's not the love of your life. It's better than not having one at all. Oh my God, it was so hard for me not to laugh when I read that. I almost have to go back and quote this. It's better to feel alone in a marriage than to be actually alone. I mean, wow. Wow. It's better to have a husband, even if you want a completely different husband and you feel alone, than to not have anyone at all. Amazing. I think also to think about this from, to remember her perspective is, she had a child on her own with a sperm donor, whereas if people have a child together and they get divorced or they don't marry or they don't stay together, they still have someone to help them. And it also sounds like she didn't have like a good support system, like grandparents or anybody. But I love it. This is my favorite paragraph. The couples my friend and I saw at the park that summer were enviable, but not because they seemed so in love. They were enviable because the husbands played with the kids for 20 minutes so their wives could eat lunch. In practice, my married friends with kids don't spend that much time with their husbands, anyway, between work and childcare, and in many cases, their biggest complaint seems to be that they never see each other. So if you rarely see your husband, but he's a decent guy who takes out the trash and sets up the baby gear, and he provides a second income that allows you to spend time with your child instead of working 6-3 hours a week to support a family on your own, how much does it matter whether the guy you marry is the one? And that is Marry Him, The Case for Settling for Mr. Good Enough by Lori Gottlieb. Dear God, all of the problems in this, I mean, literally, like that last paragraph, you know what? You might as well settle, because if you don't like each other that much, you basically never see each other anyway. I mean, so much of this was clearly coming from the place of a woman who really needed help. But I think it's different than writing a whole book that kind of rides on the whole, it's like, ooh, a woman who's like taking an anti-feminist stance, so it's now like a different form of feminism, is this weird selling point that people can like kind of monopolize on. But, oh man, it's crazy. There is one thing. I think these are comments. I believe where I stopped was the end of the article. But I think these are comments, but it's not very well spaced out on the Atlantic. I don't usually read the Atlantic, but I just wanted to bookend, well, not bookend, but postscript this with this last little quote. Take the day I went on last night. The guy was substantially older, he had a long history of major depression, and said, in reference to the movies he was writing, I'm fascinated by comas. And I have a strong interest in terrorists. He'd never been married, he was rude to the waiter, but he very much wanted a family, and he was successful, handsome, and smart. As I looked at him from across the table, I thought, yeah, I'll see him again. Maybe I can settle for that. But my very next thought was, maybe I can settle for better. It's like musical chairs. When do you take a seat? Any seat, just so you're not left standing alone. I mean, rude to the waiter, fascinated by comas and terrorists. I say, yes, girl, tie that down. Ugh. And I don't know, I'm not going to pretend as someone who just recently entered their late 20s that I know what it's like to be 30, though I can kind of say that 30 is the new 20. And yes, 20 is the new 10. So, I mean, maybe there are people who really feel desperate. I mean, I guess, like, I don't know what it's like to have a child on your own, but these are the words of Lori Gottlieb. She has a whole book on this I don't recommend reading. I recommend, you know, go live your life and do you. But yeah, thanks for listening. If you guys like this, let me know. Give a good rating. Maybe shout out on Instagram and I can do more dramatic readings of shitty-ass dating advice. And if you're dating out there, good luck, because it's a ghost town.